Hello, everyone, and welcome to Not Quite Hollywood, episode 48. I'm Jamie.
I'm Tim.
I'm Alex.
We're here to talk some topics this week.
Yay!
So, I think we should go... Who wants to go first? Anyone?
No.
All right. I can go.
Deer in the headlights. Just like, wait, what?
We'll start with mine. So, there's been a thing that I'm always fascinated with, besides, like, crossovers, besides... breaking the fourth wall, which are my favorite things. We'll get to the fourth wall in a bit here, with 52 pickup. But another thing I love a lot is the fact that sometimes in Hollywood, there are these moments where the zeitgeist is high, and like it obviously happens with zombies films or vampire films, whatever. But there are times when there's a very specific storyline that is told in a couple different ways, made concurrently and released concurrently, is somehow not related at all. And it's not like people ripping each other off in Hollywood as much as some would believe. But for example, like Deep Impact and Armageddon, there are things called twin movies. Dante's Peak and Volcano.
No Strings Attached, Friends with Benefits.
Yeah, No Strings Attached, Friends with Benefits. Speak up.
Should I say it again?
No, yeah, sure.
No Strings Attached and Friends with Benefits.
Interview with a Vampire and Dracula. Those were very similar around the same time. What do you think it is when this kind of thing happens?
I think it's like a hype thing where they had a great idea and it was something that was possibly catching some traction. And so independently, they were, you know, working on these ideas and just somehow they're like, oh, well, there's two that's going to be released around the same time. Like even, I know that it was very similar in time periods, but it wasn't necessarily like same kind of movie, but like Changeling and Public Enemy.
Okay.
I think those are
they're very different topics. Movies. Yeah, they're very different movies, but they're same time periods or very similar.
Okay.
Like it was just interesting how like for some reason they wanted to go back to this fad or whatever it was, and then just people had on the same track.
Yeah.
And I think that's why like with vampires and zombies, like vampires right now, like the whole idea of an amicable monster kind of started happening right around Twilight, and with Twilight came like Warm Bodies, and it kind of evolved into other things like TV shows like Santa Clarita Diet and iZombie. I don't know, like I feel like it's just a big thing where we go through decades of trends and then it just kind of somehow happens to mesh together.
So there are a lot of films. I just brought up the history of them. Now, some of these are kind of vague, but it goes back to like the late 30s with Gone with the Wind. There was a film released right before, the year before, called Jezebel. And they were both were about feisty, independent Southern belles during the American Civil War. So it's like wow, okay, that's pretty specific.
Uh-huh.
That is.
I mean, that could be the way of rewriting it so it sounds specific.
There was a really bad horror movie that came out a few years ago.
Oh, called Jezebel.
I was like, no, don't see this.
Yes.
This is very famous because of the whole Dan O'Bannon, who created Alien. He wanted to release his own zombie film away from Romero, and there was a whole dispute about it. But The Return of the Living Dead and then Day of the Dead came out the same year. That was a pretty popular one.
I thought that was the same movie.
No, The Return of the Living Dead is a different, more comedic vibe. It's a really fun movie. I recommend it highly. I haven't seen the second one yet. But I watched that one for the podcast earlier.
Wow. Even recently, I know it wasn't quite the same year, but Steve Jobs. Because right now I'm seeing like so many like Carmen, you know, two in the same year. But like Steve Jobs had the Michael Fassbender Steve Jobs and also Ashton Kutcher Steve Jobs.
I think that was also because he had just died.
They were both making Jobs. Yeah, Steve Jobs.
Yeah, they were both in production and one was based on a book, one was not. And they also kind of, one got delayed, and says why. I think Steve Jobs is a way better film, obviously.
Oh, absolutely.
But I haven't seen Jobs yet, so I can't really say that for sure.
I've not seen Jobs. It's Ashton Kutcher. Not like Steve Jobs, because I don't like Aaron Sorkin. So I think his writing is way too smart, way too unrealistic. It's almost like people went through the conversation, and then they go through it again the second time and say what they would say.
So some popular ones, like Alex mentioned, No Strings Attached and Friends with Benefits. Yeah, I remember that one, that really shitty movie Skyline, and then Battle Los Angeles.
That's right.
Oh my god, Skyline. Battle Los Angeles, both oh really god. Bad. They also had the Oblivion and After Earth in the same year, right?
Yep.
It was Oblivion
first.
Wasn't it Oblivion and...
It was the same year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Olympus Has Fallen and White House Down. I can't believe those are the same
yes,
year.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
God, that was within months. In, yeah. Within months. Wow. April and June. That was really close.
Wow. That's ridiculous.
Mirror, both of those. Mirror, and Snow White and the Huntsman was a big one. This Is the End, The World's End. A little different, but
White House Down was better.
Yeah, that's right. Rapture Palooza was all about that, too. Apocalyptic comedy film.
Right.
The Double and Enemy.
People thought that was the same movie.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah. People didn't... because it both has Jake Gyllenhaal, right?
No. The Double is about Saddam Hussein's body double, right? I wanted to see that movie. It was a great trailer.
Jesse Eisenberg.
See, I thought they were really? The same movie. I thought that Double was Enemy. I don't know why.
The Hercules and Legend of Hercules. That was pretty funny.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I didn't know this one. Yeah. I didn't know this one. The Yves Saint Laurent, and then Saint Laurent. It was like a biopic about this designer. Like, that's pretty crazy. Same year.
That's crazy, yeah. Christine and the documentary Christine. Yeah, Kate plays Christine and Christine. They both came out. They were both at Sundance last year, which was like super confusing because everyone was like, wait, which one? What's Christine?
I was just thinking, aren't they making her dramatic movie about her?
I have no idea. Maybe.
And then one that's, they kind of stretch it sometimes, like Zootopia and Sing. Here's what they said, it's the same. Both are animated movies set in modern cities popularized by anthropomorphic animals.
What was it, Zootopia and what?
And Sing. That's, you know. I don't know. Winston Churchill biopics this year, Darkest Hour and Churchill. That's a very similar one.
Okay.
There's also the one, Dunkirk, and then there's that one, the trailer just came out for the other movie about Dunkirk. They're making the fake movie. What's it called? The
documentary?
No. The trailer like just came out. I cannot remember what it's called though.
Yeah. So anyway, Life After Beth and Burying the Ex were two zombie romantic comedies. I remember seeing Burying the Ex. Anton Yelchin.
Oh really?
Yeah.
I really want to see Life After Beth because I love
Aubrey Plaza.
I love Aubrey Plaza. She's a legend. That's what I. Yeah. And I was if I was well nice, she would be mine.
She's she's definitely
She would not be mine, but then
she's one of my favorites. some of these are very similar, some of them aren't. It's just really weird how, like, for example, the Jobs one's kind of clear. It was like he died, they're making a biopic, capitalizing off that tech.
The Mirror one, that's what fascinates me because, isn't that a Disney property?
Mirror was a Disney film, but Snow White is in the public domain, has been for a long time.
Huh. You mean the Disney movie is not the original?
No. Okay. No, Snow White and the Seven Dwarves is actually. There weren't seven dwarves.
Okay.
Yeah, which is a weird thing, and it was a very dark story. It wasn't quite happy. So yeah, they twisted that one too.
And then obviously Snow White and the Huntsman got a sequel, and Mirror didn't.
Yeah.
Because Snow White and the Huntsman kind of had, Charlize Theron kills it in that, and then there's also Chris Hemsworth.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Chris Hemsworth, not Lee.
The hottest Hemsworth.
But then the other one had Lily Collins and what's her name?
Oh, Liam, no.
I think he's so cute.
Lily Collins and...
And Julia Roberts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which you would think would be a big...
No. But I feel like it was just... It's the same director as...
Tarsem Singh is The Cell.
Yeah, Tarsem Singh, he did Fall. The Fall.
Yep.
Beautifully shot movie. That one took years to do, and that was one of my favorite movies ever. But, like, it didn't work with... I mean, it works on paper, but I feel like the humor that they tried to put in it was not... working for a wider audience. It was a very much for kids movie, whereas Snow White and the Huntsman could have some kids who wanted to go see it because it's Snow White.
Yeah.
And Kristen Stewart, as much as people hate her, she still has an audience.
Yeah.
Charlize Theron and Chris Hemsworth. Like, it was just a lot of really great things to...
Did a lot of these movies do similarly at the box office to each other or no?
Not necessarily.
I'd be interested to see.
Like, there are the ones that I remember seeing... That obviously we'll know the difference between the two, but Despicable Me and Megamind were both about villains who are heroes. Despicable Me and Megamind.
That's right. That's right.
And obviously Despicable Me went on to go crazy because of fucking Minions.
There's another movie coming out.
And then like United 93 and Flight 93, which I forgot. That's right. The other one was even a thing.
Yeah. Right. Oh, The Prestige and the Illusionist. I forgot. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the biggest one.
I still have not seen The Prestige. I've seen both now.
Yeah, finally. But they're both amazing.
Capote and Infamous. They're both about Truman Capote.
Yeah.
I really like Capote.
Gamer and Surrogates.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Some of them are a stretch. Like Freddy vs. Jason and Alien vs. Predator. That's not the same thing.
Well, that was interesting too because that was like a year after year crossing over.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's like never really been done up until that. Actually, no, they did a while ago.
With there's like, also a they do Jason versus everything. I didn't know that. I thought it was only Freddy versus Jason.
Well, in comics and stuff, they do. They're yeah. not really yeah. like in movies.
They did Jason versus Leatherface in a movie. They did.
Oh wow.
Jason versus Michael in a movie.
One of the funniest things to me is that there was one I remember loving as a kid. I watched it recently. It didn't hold up. It wasn't for a 52 pickup, but it was something earlier. But Scary Movie came out, and as it was getting produced, there was another film that was ready to go, and they realized, oh, Scary Movie's coming out, so they put it on video only. Instead of trying to compete, they got pushed aside. It was called Shriek If You Know What I Did Last Friday the 13th. And it was starred Tiffany Amber Thiessen, who played Kelly Kapowski in Saved by the Bell.
Okay.
Really fun. And yeah, so it was just really, it was cheesy. It was definitely more, it wasn't as good as Scary Movie, which is not saying a lot, of course, but.
I mean, but Scary Movie was...
Was funny.
Was hilarious.
Yeah. But speaking of hilarious, who's up?
Oh. I don't know what that... I don't know what don't that know. Segue was.
I don't know. I'm just... Yeah, I forgot what you guys are. What's hilarious is I don't remember what your topics are at all.
Oh. I'm still kind of deciding. I guess I've decided. Yes. So, speaking of... I don't know. Movies. I don't know. Fuck.
Next topic. There's a segue. Next topic.
Yeah. So, we were talking about Stephen King last episode. A lot of his movies are being remade this year. There's the new It. There's
Dark Tower.
Dark Tower.
The Dark Tower is what I was thinking of. And then his new. This is so relevant now. Thank you. His new miniseries was just announced on Amazon.
Oh yeah.
With J.J. Abrams called Castle Rock.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it's
awesome.
Supposed to be an anthology series. It's gonna be awesome. So I wanted to bring up his best movie adaptations. What you guys think is his best? The best of Stephen King. So my favorites are Misery, Love Misery.
Oh, absolutely.
What's another one? 1408's pretty good.
Yeah, that's really good for a short.
Green
Mile.
Green Mile's right. good. Awesome. I love Shawshank.
Yep.
The Mist was straight. Was it The Mist?
The Mist
and The Fog was another one, by the way.
Yeah. The more I think about The Mist, the more I like it, except I just hate Marcia Gay Harden's character so fucking much. She's the really religious girl. Like, you're all going to hell.
I know, she's so bad.
Really killed that movie.
You know what? Yeah. Oh, that was good. But, like, the end just had me thinking, like, that was so fucked up. Like, the end was, like, oh, yeah. Yeah. My God.
Did you know that ending originally, that's the original ending, the director also wanted to make that movie black and white.
Yeah. Oh.
And the studio gave him a choice to say you can either make it black and white and not have the original ending, or just have the original ending and make it in color. And so the director's cut, apparently, is black and white and with the original ending.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I wonder what the Frank Darabont would have been. By the way, who did Green Mile and Shawshank did that film.
Oh, oh really?
Wow. Yeah.
And
The Walking Dead.
How did we not bring up The Shining? I was trying to think of the other one. Yeah. These great movies, but then he has a track record of, like...
Terrible movies.
Yes. Which I haven't seen Cujo yet. I hear it's good.
But is that based on the people who made it? Because, like, Christine was really good. But then, like, I like Thinner, the idea, the story of Thinner, but I just didn't feel like it was a really well-made movie.
I haven't seen Thinner.
Exactly. Cat's Eye. Yeah. Pet Sematary. I love Pet Sematary. I'll be revisiting that someday.
Yeah, Pet Sematary is good. I recently watched
it. Isn't Children of the Corn?
Yep, Children of the Corn.
I haven't seen that yet either.
I've only seen the first two or three. There's like eight of them.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen Under the Dome, the show?
No, I wanted to.
It's like, starts out good, but then you're like, okay, this is just going to be like,
Simpsons did it.
I tried to watch, it was about the writer, it was called Something Bone, no, it was like a miniseries.
Oh shit, no, it's called Bag of Bones.
Yeah, oh god, I tried to watch that and it was like so weird, in the middle I was like, I'm done with this, like.
Didn't he also, I don't know. Wasn't there another one that was that Bag of Bones, like the in the water?
Yeah.
Okay. And there was also 1973 that they did last year. With
11/22/63.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, oh fuck, yeah.
Yes, that was great. I went to the premiere of that, actually, at UCLA, and J.J. Abrams and James Franco was there.
Wow.
And that was awesome. I love that show. But yeah, Stephen King, it's just so, like, anything that says Stephen King on it, I'm like, I'll go see it. Like, I feel like he's just so above, like, horror and just, I mean, I tried to read one of his books, and I hear his books are really long and, like, very...
Long-winded.
Tedious to get through. I tried to read the second sequel to The Shining,
and it was like,
I felt like I needed to read the actual Shining book before I read that one, because it was like, it was about the kid, and I was like, I don't really know if I care much about the kid, but and I hear his writing process. I went to a horror panel And it was with the writers of Final Destination and some other movies. They were talking about Stephen King's writing style as he, like, writes the first draft, puts it in a drawer for, like, a year, 2 years, comes back to it, reads it, and then he's, like, it's almost like a fresh pair of eyes.
Yep.
So he's his own, you know, editor. And then he can look at it from a different perspective, and I think that's a really good, like, writing style.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I've done it. It helps kind of forgetting about a script for a year or two, and it's like, oh, yeah, come back to this. Like, holy shit, this is bad.
Yeah.
Time to fix it.
People said, you know, the term was, like, you know, putting it under a mattress. You know, yeah. They left it there for years or months or whatever it was, and when they come back to it is when they're like, okay, well, this actually does have lots of good stuff in it, so now let's, like, sift through the shit.
Yeah. This Castle Rock series, I'm like, what is this? Like, the trailer, it seems like it's making its own, like, Stephen King universe kind of a thing. But, like, I don't know if it's going to focus on a different one of his characters or if it's going to be, like, a totally new idea every season.
It sounds like it's just the best of the best. They show Annie Wilkes. They show, I think they even show, like, The Shining. They show, like, Shining, everything.
Yeah.
Everything's in there. So I imagine that they're going to do, like a story, an episode
kind of a thing.
That'd be kind of cool. Yeah. I mean, it's all technically based in this town, not really.
Yeah,
like,
it's scary.
Like, it's going to be in there, even if they're doing another one, and that one's officially Derry, Maine. They're making it all one town anyway.
Yeah.
But he's written a lot of his own screenplays, too.
Yeah.
Not a lot, but enough.
Go ahead. Have you guys heard of the Dollar Babies?
No. Yeah. My school did one.
Yeah. So pretty much, he really believes that, you know, good stories should be given to people who don't have as much money to get the rights to amazing stories. So he has a list online that's always changing of short stories that he has that he will give you the rights to for a dollar.
Yep. You just can't make money off it. You can't really, it sucks. You can't distribute it, right?
Yeah, you can't do anything.
Festivals
that's like,
only.
It's pretty much just for students trying to become filmmakers, so they need good content. So he's like, I will give you the rights to whatever story that's on this list for a dollar. You just can't make money off of it. It's just not
so it's
yours.
Like, you can make it and then go to film festivals, but you can't sell.
You can't even put it online. It's
so
it's a very specific thing, but then
what's
it's
the
for
point, then?
It's for students to be able to use good material
to make,
because,
their, to make films.
Yeah, because students have terrible stories most of the time.
Yeah.
So to be able to work with an amazing story is good practice. And
that's
like
cool.
For you to be able to, because you can use that to, if you go to film festivals or whatever it is, you get still recognized for your work, the adaptation of whatever your filmmaking is. So I feel like it's an amazing opportunity for filmmakers to really utilize that. Especially now that adaptations are so...
Yeah, I'm glad he's, like, that kind of a person. Like, it's a good person, you know?
Yeah.
We should revisit Stephen King another time, too, just because we should really go into, like, what our favorite adaptations are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be another topic, I think, at this point. We got to kind of move on, though.
Okay, yeah.
Speaking
of editing this podcast and filmmaking and behind-the-scenes shit, the one thing I've been doing a lot, like I said last week, is that I've been editing for a company, and I do a lot of their, so like it's a nonprofit like arts organization, and they have different labs throughout the year, and I've been hired multiple times to edit for their acting/writers creative lab. And so they have a month-long class, and it's like at the end they shoot scenes for their reels and they submit them to festivals so they get IMDb credit, and then I edit them. And so last week I edited 6 of those in like 5 days, 4 or 5 days.
Wow.
And
it's like dizzying, like sitting.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, I've always edited quite a few for them, but I've never done 6.
How long
was
it?
They're like 6-7 minutes.
Oh god.
Shit.
Yeah, and it's so much dialogue all the time. This is something that I hope, like, none of them are going to listen to this podcast, but like a lot of the time they're not very good because they're learning.
Yeah.
And it was just like, so whenever I see actors on screen now, I'm just like, you were either really good on set or you're just terrible, and they somehow got this one take and the editor had to sit through and scrub through every single take and find this one gem, and that's what gets you the Oscar, you know? It was very eye-opening because I've always, most of the projects I've edited have been something that I've shot or I was on set for. And so, like, these are projects that I'm like, okay, I know who the actor is, or, like, I've had a hand in casting. And so we always picked good actors for our stuff. But then to be able to edit for an acting class was very different because it's not your job to be like, oh, critiquing their acting. It's how can I make them look like they're amazing actors? And It was a challenge a lot of the time, but I mean, you got to do what you got to do.
This was for their acting class.
This is for their acting class.
Oh, okay.
So these are people who are just starting or need material for their reels and things, and so fortunately, everything was pretty. I don't know smooth. Where that train was going.
Oh, okay.
But
do you, yeah. Do you exclusively use Premiere, or do you use Avid or Final Cut? Or
I mean, I started on Avid in school.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, but it was they were very snobbish about it, where they were like, you cannot use any other program other than Avid.
Yeah.
And I was like, why? This is in Michigan, too. Like, why can't I use anything else?
Oh, that's very nice. You know, I went to Cal State Northridge, mm-hmm. and they taught us Final Cut 10. So
Final Cut 10?
Yep.
Oh, no.
That was the first year they were like, we're doing Final Cut 10. I was like, really? And so I started Final Cut 10. And then I actually, just this week, started using Premiere to help out my mom's documentary I'm scrubbing through.
Wow.
And like at first I was like, what is this? Like, I was so confused at first. And I'm still like figuring it out, but I'm like, I like 10, but maybe it's because that's the only thing I've used before, you know?
Not to mention you're younger, so that you normally wouldn't have been taught that beforehand. Like, my school, we did Final Cut 7 for a long time, and then we said, fuck it, when 10 came out, they just switched to Avid and Premiere.
That's the normal thing to do, yeah.
They got rid of everything Final Cut.
Yeah. And right now, like, industry standard for film and TV is Avid, and independent filmmakers, it's mostly Premiere.
Yeah, a lot of filmmakers use Premiere. I think Gone Girl, I think, was all done on Premiere also.
Yeah, and also like a new, do you know DaVinci?
I don't.
Okay, so Blackmagic, did you say I'm not that smart? No. So Blackmagic Cinema Camera, they have, they're really developing some amazing cameras, and they do a lot of like broadcasting, multicam technology.
Yeah.
But they their big program for a while was Resolve.
Okay.
So DaVinci Resolve was the thing, and I think like so Blackmagic and DaVinci. Yes, but then they recently turned it into an editing thing. I don't know how recently they did, but then like it's
really
like an amazing interface to like it's a timeline editing, but you can also do so many things on it. And the for you all you filmmakers out there who don't have resources to get Adobe Creative Cloud, download DaVinci Resolve. It's free. You don't have to get the pro version because the pro version has a lot of capabilities for multicam and things like that. But
I think we'll put a link in the.
We won't.
No, we won't. Okay, we won't. No. Go find it yourself.
Yes, just go to.
I might. I just have to. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Just go to DaVinci's website and you can download DaVinci Resolve. Also, they have their own 3D compositing program called DaVinci Fusion. That one functions more on a not node-based editing system, but those two programs is what they use to edit Spy with Melissa McCarthy. Yeah.
Cool.
And it's very powerful. They're both very powerful tools. And
do you prefer that to, like, this is, might sound very dumb because I don't know things. Does After Effects do the same thing or no?
After Effects is the 3D compositing that's for
Adobe.
And it's, from what I've experienced, I like After Effects better. But it only does so much because when you're really getting into 3D, you have to go to other programs as well.
One of my goals in life has been to learn After Effects, and I've tried, and it's so hard.
I can teach you. I guess, okay, so I'll give you some, like, resources for if you're learning After Effects.
Please. Give me some tips.
Yeah. If you go to videocopilot.net, they are probably the standard After Effects tutorial like thing. They actually, the guy who did that, his name is Andrew Kramer. He worked on Force Awakens.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he has plugins for lightsabers. He has plugins for what they call color vibrance, which is like adding so much amazing color to whatever you're adding. And just amazing things that are... things that you can just do on your own. They also have bundles for not cheap explosions. They look amazing, but they're very affordable. So they have things that you can download.
And the tutorials are cheap.
Well, the tutorials are free, but then they have plugins and things that they've already bundled up.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And those are expensive, kind of. I mean, you still have to pay a couple hundred bucks for them, but it's nowhere near having to hire somebody to do it.
Yeah. I've tried to do some of the tutorials before and like, I think sometimes I was like on a different version than he was or something.
So yeah, you
just
need to
make sure everything's like synced up.
Mm-hmm. But then if you look at the prop, what he's actually doing and kind of breaking that down, then you're actually, it's pretty easy to start.
Universal.
Crossing. It's pretty universal.
Oh, I didn't mean that. Sorry.
Oh. It's, you know, understanding what the frame is. And so when you go into Fusion, it actually does break it down a little differently. But then if you understand what you're doing to an image, it's actually easy to cross over.
Oh.
And if you're looking for any other kind of tutorials to make home video or like DSLR imaging look very cinematic, check out a guy named Chris Truini. It's K-R-I-S. His last name is T-R-U-I-N-I. His YouTube page is Crisco Art Productions. And he is a very young gentleman, very young. Like, when I started watching him, he was 20.
Wow.
Yeah. And he...
He's got his whole life ahead of him.
Oh, my God. I mean, Adobe, at 20, Adobe had him over for one of their live sessions. So he, like, had 6 hours of lectures streamed live on how to take cheap quality footage, like, from your DSLR and make it look cinematic with coloring and... Wow. How to, like, it's adding light that you don't have and separating the subject from the background. And also, he has so many great videos about, like, color theory and lighting theory. He, like, looks into the different cinematographers and gaffers and things like that and really breaks down why are they using these source lights and what does that do to the story and colors and blah, blah, blah. So he's about to do a series on colors. And because he just did something on color theory, but he didn't break down, like, what each color does. And he's like, he's going to do one where he's breaking down each color and what moods it might do, which movies used it. Very, very easy to follow. And it's very not, like, he doesn't throw jargon at you. He really makes it a point because he went to film school for a couple years and he said he just didn't learn much in it. And he was very depressed because he spent so much money.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's not learning as much as he wanted to. And so he does some amazing work.
Yeah. I have a question for you. You're editing on Premiere right now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you prefer Avid or do you prefer Premiere?
I haven't used Avid since 2009.
Oh, wow.
So it's been a long time since I've used Avid. So I can't tell you which one I prefer. Avid definitely is very powerful. But the way that Avid translated over to digital is still in the same film mindset. So if you're editing on, let's say, Premiere, and you have a whole sequence and you want to just cut it, you can use the blade tool and just slice it.
Yeah.
But with Avid, you can't actually... From the version that I was using, you can't do that. You have to have the in and out like you're cutting the film strip.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
so they transferred it over to the digital. But then it's the same thing that what an Avid would actually do back in the day when you were using film. So it's a little less user-friendly, but then the amount of stuff that they have in Avid is so incredible, which is why the studios use it, because it's so powerful. And with, like, a lot of the additional plugins that you would need in Premiere, you probably wouldn't have to. But then right now, like, Premiere's definitely competing real well with it.
Yeah.
Because with Creative Cloud and even with Resolve, like, do you guys know, like, masking and stuff?
Yeah.
Resolve and Fusion have mask tracking, like, that's auto, which is incredible. So, like, if they have just this one segment of, like, I just want to color correct this one's part of the screen, and you do that,
yep,
it registers all the detail around it, so it pretty much does a very rough rotoscoping on its own, which is, like, it's amazing what technology is able to do nowadays. So I can't speak on how I like Avid now, just because I haven't used any of the newer versions, but Premiere is what I have right now because I have it.
Do you prefer Premiere? I know the show is edited in Premiere, right?
No. This show, because I don't know audio programs enough, I don't have time to learn them, I use Final Cut Pro to edit this. Final Cut 7.
Final Cut Pro.
I used Premiere recently for a video I just was messing around with because I was trying to get back into it. And I did some editing for work. There are some things that frustrate me about it compared to Final Cut. And I find myself going back to Final Cut, which is bad. It's a bad crutch because you're going to end up needing to use Premiere or Avid.
Like, what stuff is frustrating?
I use a lot of shortcuts. So some of the shortcuts, minor nitpick to the bigger ones, are different and not easy to use. Sometimes you lock a track and you can't do anything with it, audio-wise or video-wise. And it's been a while since I've used it now, a couple months. I just don't like some of the things that I used to do. It seemed obvious that are not there. And I'm sure there's a way to do it.
Like the keyboard shortcuts and things?
Like keyboard shortcuts are, like I said, a minor nitpick. Okay. But there's other things that just frustrated me about the editing process. I do like that it's integrated with everything else in the Creative Cloud. So I can go into Audition, fix the audio clip on the fly, and come back. And it'll automatically render back in. Just like Photoshop or After Effects. But I don't know. It's just I have to use it more.
Yeah, I think that's
I have an old version too. Older.
I have CS6.
Oh,
I have like 5.2.
Okay.
I tried UCSX the other day and it wouldn't even open.
Yeah, and so like, I had that's to get another reason why my computer is not updated.
Yeah.
5.5.
Yeah, 5. Okay, yeah, you need to update to 6 or CC because a lot of those bugs probably were fixed.
I'm guessing they are. Yeah. It's my thing.
Because transitioning from man to woman, I'm kidding. I'm sorry. Edit that out, please.
When you're transitioning.
Transitioning from Final Cut 7 to Premiere was very seamless for me because, the shortcuts were different, but then everything else was just all right there. And honestly, I learned more about how to do things in Premiere afterwards. So, like, I never focused on coloring when I was using Final Cut. So I don't really know how that would look like in Final Cut anymore, but then using adjustment layers in Premiere is like so powerful. And I was like, I almost don't need to take it to After Effects to color anymore, which is incredible to be able to do that. And so I was just very impressed with what Premiere can do. Also, Premiere's audio editings is actually still pretty good too. They have a couple things that they can't do, but for the most part, like recently I've been dealing with lots of white noise and room tone issues, and like using denoise and just adjusting that.
Is that a program or a?
It's an effect.
Plug-in effect.
Yeah, and it actually did a really good job with that. And so you can just do like a high pass, low pass, and denoise, and it gets the dialogue real crisp. So.
I edited my senior thesis, and I had to do offline editing because we shot in 4K. And it was such a pain in the ass. And I feel like I know a lot about editing, and then fucking you guys are talking, and I know almost nothing about what you're talking about.
I feel like it's just because every time you just have to learn more about everything. And I think this
it's like learning a language that you don't know.
Yeah.
You pick up on it eventually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like the more you do it, the more intuitive it becomes. And like, so watching movies now, it's so much easier for me to be like, oh, this is how they got that.
Yeah.
Because the more you do it, the more you see or hear how it looks or sounds. And then once you break it down, then you can actually kind of see how you get the product that you want. Because it somehow always looked very video-y. I never understood how to get that. And so like especially with watching these tutorials and then learning more about color theory and how to color and things like that, it just became a lot easier for me to translate what I have in my head to the screen. And it just comes with practice, and you just have to go do it.
So editing is all about transition, right?
It's all about transition.
We got to move on because we're going to transition this into the final parts here.
Yes.
So really quickly, my 52 pickup for this week was the 1997 release, George of the Jungle.
Yes. Brendan Fraser's best work.
Besides Encino Man, maybe the first Mummy. I like those.
The first Mummy. Yeah. I love that one.
Alex is not a fan.
Leslie Mann's best work.
I don't know. I like her in Knocked Up and her in This Is 40 isn't bad.
No, I agree.
I mean, her daughters are some of the best work probably because they're freaking adorable. Maude and can't remember the other girl's name.
Oh, that's her daughter?
In Knocked Up? Yeah, they're both really
good. I thought you meant George of the Jungle.
No. George of the Jungle was really funny because we mentioned it earlier with Saved by the Bell. This is why I brought it up in the Shriek thing, because Zach Morris would always break the fourth wall, talk to the camera, and I loved breaking the fourth wall. That was like my first interaction, and then my second interaction, which really solidified me liking that element, was George of the Jungle. The narrator breaks the fourth wall, talks to the audience, talks to the other characters, progresses the story forward sometimes. And like, it's just really funny, and it was such a great voice. His name's like Keith Scott. I looked it up.
It is a great voice, yeah.
Yeah. And the film is it fun? I think it because the cartoon was probably rip off of Tarzan when it came out, right? I mean that's
yeah.
And they did an animated intro. When's the last time you guys seen this film? A long time ago.
A while ago.
Oh, I loved it though. Middle school or whatever it was.
I loved it as a kid.
I did too. I loved it.
Yeah.
Did it hold up?
See, that's the thing. Like sometimes it's cheesy, but I had a really great time with it. And maybe it's more nostalgia this time, but I really did enjoy myself.
Yeah. I just, that scene on the bridge, I remember very, very well.
Oh, yeah. Where he plays Spider-Man and rescues this guy in a parachute. George of the Jungle, man. It's going to be one of those things that you look back on Brendan Fraser's career, and that's, like, one of the best things he's done. Yeah, like, Bedazzled, he was funny.
Isn't that weird that, like, I mean, I think to us, because we kind of grew up with it, I think of Brendan Fraser and I think of that movie, but I think like to adults it's like, oh, it was just a silly, you know, kids movie.
Sure. But there are some references that, in there that, like, I'm always baffled they put some things by kids. Like, I didn't know what Armani was as kids, and that they went through with that, and some other, like, sexual references. They always get through. Really? It's like, wow, I don't know. Very, very minor, like, alluding to the fact stuff. Like, Leslie's mom was talking about shacking up with George when he was in the city.
Was that the mom from Arrested Development?
No, the mom from Two and a Half Men, Holland Taylor.
I don't watch the show. Oh, yeah. She's funny.
Yeah. But it holds up as well as you would imagine it would, too. Mm. It's pretty fun. I recommend watching it again if you haven't seen it in a while. And
I will. That would be fun.
Yeah, I want to watch it for sure.
It's definitely campy because, like, you know, the way Brendan Fraser talks and the way he hits into trees all the time. It's like, oh,
God. Who does the voice of the gorilla? Is he famous?
Yeah, John Cleese. Okay, John Cleese is the voice of the gorilla. It's just awesome.
Oh, man.
I love John Cleese. I wish I could go into more detail. I just don't have the time. But we're going to talk communal films now. So it's my turn again. Been a while. Been about a month or so. I wanted to, because we have, the Green Room was the last one.
Yes.
For me.
Yes.
And I wanted to do, it was either Green Room or this film. They're both good. Elicited guttural reactions from the audience. This is a documentary, which we talk about docs between shows, that is so disturbing, so powerful.
I'm scared.
It is called, and it's still on Netflix, Dear Zachary.
Oh, I did not think that's what this is. I thought you were going to say The Nightmare.
Oh, no, The Nightmare is good.
Oh, I love that one.
It's very good. We did talk about that. Awesome. You should watch it. Yeah. It's really good. Because they reenact everything in that one. That's good. Yeah. Dear Zachary is legit, like, heartbreaking. And it's, I don't want to go much into what it's about. If you've seen it, you know what you're getting into. Like, you know, fuck, holy shit. If these two guys have no idea what they're getting into.
I have no idea.
Oh, jeez. I'm scared.
I don't even want to spoil anything.
Okay.
Because it's a ride.
Should we watch a trailer or should we just fucking...
No, you should just watch it. Just watch it. Don't watch anything about it. Just watch it. Somebody told me to watch it years ago and I did. And I was like, okay, thank you for showing me that because it's an amazing documentary. Really well done.
What year is it?
2010, 11, around there.
Okay, so it's recent.
It's more recent, yeah. Okay. If you want to watch it along with us, listeners, go for it. Don't look it up. Just watch it.
I'm putting out... The $5 thing is good for this time, too.
Oh.
Yeah.
Continuing the transition.
For anybody. What not my family, but anybody else.
Okay. No families included yet. So my brother, who doesn't listen, will not be included as well. So Dear Zachary. It's on Netflix. Watch it and tell me what you think.
I'm excited.
This has been Not Quite Hollywood, episode 48.
Follow me on Twitter at AlexHoward11. Instagram, me and my blazer. And my blog is Dog on Movie Reviews.
And my Instagram account is Tim Jim Lim Artist.
I have an Instagram, but I don't use it. It's Guy on a Wire. I'm really trying to nail that SEO, guys. I'm trying to get everything Guy on a Wire related. GuyonAWire.com, Guy on a Wire on Twitter. This podcast is NQH Pod on Twitter. We are on Facebook and Not Quite Hollywood.
Our email.
Our email is I keep doing weenie moves. notquitepod@gmail.com for any questions or discussion.
Or free money.
Free money's cool too. Advertisement. And
subscribe on iTunes.
Yeah, subscribe on iTunes. That's what I was going to get at.
Well, there you go.
Alex is always nailing that one. I like it. I appreciate it because I always forget
subscribe.
It.
Subscribe. If you'd like to give us a big thumbs up.
Yeah, that's true.
That will be on YouTube, but we're not on YouTube.
Or just review us on iTunes.
Give us five stars.
Five stars only, please.
Five stars only. Five or four. Only five.
It really helps bring us up in the search results. It would be nice.
That would be great.
But until next time, when we talk Dear Zachary, I'm Jamie.
I am Tim.
I'm Alex.
And have a good week.
Bye.
It was a different register that time.
Bye. I'm very excited about this talking.